For our last session before the afternoon break, we welcome Michael Tamlin. Let me let you start setting that up. Michael Tamlin is the EVP for content, sales, and merchandising at Kobo. As you may know, Kobo was started with investment from a Canadian bookseller, Indigo, but was purchased last year by a much larger Japanese retailer called Rakuten. Now they are well-financed and a global competitor in the book marketplace, opening up new markets and alliances with the bookstore chain Livraria Cultura in Brazil, as we talked earlier, and also that they will be starting to do business in Portugal. Michael will tell us about Kobo's current expansions, what opportunities they offer for publishers, and how to take advantage of them. Please welcome Michael Tamlin.
Thank you. I am Michael Tamlin. I am Executive Vice President of Content Sales and Merchandising for Kobo. And I have this very, very interesting role. I work with Kobo going around the world. We acquire content. My group manages publisher relationships with publishers we have around the world. We deal with content management and metadata, the flow of files back and forth between ourselves and our publishers. My group manages merchandising and pricing. How do we sell the ebooks that we receive from publishers around the world? We also manage the self-publishing group, Kobo Writing Life, and are deeply involved in the day-to-day process of content analytics. It is, without a doubt, the best job ever. And it gets me very excited, mostly because it's not very often that you get to kind of stand in a position where you get to watch a whole industry remake itself, where there's this little window, this short moment, where everyone takes a look at the rules by which they have run their businesses, the assumptions that they have made about the customers that they have, and they decide what's true and what isn't true. And so, Kobo, in case you don't know, an ebook retailing company. We have about 10 million users. We have a range of beautiful e-ink and Android tablet devices, a collection of content of about 3 million titles. We've delivered ebooks to just about 190 countries around the world, between 75 and 120 on any given day. And we have a passionate, obsessive focus on the reader wherever we go. And so this is the world. It's a very big place. We spend a lot of time flying around it. We began in Toronto in Canada in 2009. We also launched in the US at roughly the same time. And then decided to also open up ebook stores on the other side of the world in Australia and New Zealand, detouring briefly to Hong Kong to open up an ebook partnership with Swindon there. And then coming back to Europe in 2011, where we launched ebook partnerships with WH Smith, with Fnac in France, and opened up an ebook retail operation in Germany as well. And so that was a very busy 2 years. It was sort of both sides of the world, a number of different countries, a number of different markets. But along the way, we found something that was very important. We found these fantastic retail partners that we work with, WH Smith, Fnac in France, Indigo in Canada, Collins in Australia, Whitcools in New Zealand, and then also general retail and consumer electronics partners. And these have really been the way that we've been able to move from market to market as quickly as we can, even before our acquisition, because it turns out that even though they are bricks and mortar retailers, they get some of the most important parts of ebook selling very well. And we've been able to leverage those. I'll talk a little bit about those as we go. And so after 2011, launching these partnerships, bringing up these ebook retailers, what were we going to do next? We hatched a plan. We would be a 12 in 12 in 2012. Obviously, marketing people were involved there somewhere. And what that meant for us was we would be in 12 new countries or launching 12 new partners in 12 months, that that was what our next big step of growth was going to look like. And so we started looking at markets, we started looking at territories through a very particular lens. You know, obviously looking at literacy, but looking at literacy in combination with population size, with disposable income, the size of the reading market as a whole. Did people have easy access to internet? Did they have easy access to wireless? Was there content available to sell in digital? Did publishers have the rights? Were they starting to digitize? Were they making it available? And were there local partners that we could sell with? And the ideal for us on that last point is a great national book retailer. Someone who people know, someone who readers are familiar with, a place where readers go every day. And then around that, also consumer electronics and general retail. But that book retailer and that partnership with that book retailer was absolutely key. The reason being that although the infrastructure of selling ebooks, the manufacturing of devices, the aggregation of content is a global endeavor, book selling is fundamentally a local experience. And so knowing what readers want, knowing which authors readers are passionate about, knowing which new categories are rising or falling is something that we get fastest out of local retail partnership. They're also really good at putting things in people's hands. They've spent years and decades putting books in people's hands. It also turns out they're really good at putting devices in people's hands. And putting devices in people's hands ends up being the single most effective thing that we can do to drive adoption and to drive ebook sales around the world. And most importantly, they do it to people who read. They don't do it to people who are interested in buying flat screen TVs or USB keys. They don't do it to people who buy DVDs. They do it to people who love to read. Having those devices in that bookstore is of ultimate importance. And so we had this simple plan. There are 12 months in the year, country a month, for 12 months. Makes perfect sense. The math is easy, it's symmetrical, it works out perfectly. It didn't quite work out that way. In the tradition of the best laid plans, everything kind of started out well. January. Launched Libris in the Netherlands. And everything was perfect about that launch. We had content aggregation through Central Bookhouse. The publishers had, for the most part, come together and put all of their ebooks in one place. It was fantastic. You had publishers actively wanting retailers to come into the market and build a more competitive ebook retail marketplace. There was lots of EPUB around, there was lots of Onyx around, and with Libris we had a fantastic retail partner, really good at in-store execution, passionate about selling the service, everything you could possibly want. At the same time, we were acquired in January by a very large Japanese e-commerce concern called Rakuten, which meant, next stop was Japan. unlike Netherlands, Japan has a few challenges to it. There are, in fact, an entirely different set of local DRM standards in Japan. There is no EPUB in Japan, actually, none. You have vertical text, you have right-to-left reading, you have highly vigilant publishers who are passionate about the quality of the works and wanting to make sure that they're presented with an extreme degree of fidelity. But there are also no metadata standards or subject coding standards. And a completely unique e-commerce culture, which in Japan is highly effective, but also means you get to leverage very little of what you know about e-commerce from other markets in order to sell well, convert well, and merchandise well in the Japanese market. So we had a little bit of stuff to do. We had to convince publishers to adopt a new standard of DRM that they'd never seen before. We had to undertake a massive conversion effort for Japanese content into EPUB. We had to build new viewers that could handle vertical and right-to-left reading. We had to build a whole QA and review process, both for viewers and for content, to get publisher buy-in. We had to create a metadata standard for Japan. We had to map subject codes to BISAC in the absence of anything else. We chose BISAC. We had to build a whole separate team in Tokyo for publisher relations, for content management, for merchandising, all operating in local language and all solely focused on the needs of Japanese publishers and Japanese readers. That took a little bit of time. July, fast as so. Country one, Netherlands, January. Country two, Japan, where we launched Rakuten Kobo, which has been fantastically successful for us. And then things start to pile up. So now we kind of have to make up some time. So you know, September was three countries, Mondadori in Italy, Fnac in Portugal, and a launch in Switzerland. And then October, November, and December turn out to be, Livraria Cultura in Brazil, the American Booksellers Association in the US, the Booksellers Association in the UK, and a couple of others that unfortunately I can't talk about right now, but some of which may kind of leak out over the course of the next few days. And so why did everything kind of pile into the fall, aside from the fact that it took us a while to do Japan? It turns out that when retailers are making an ebook partnership decision right now, they actually take it shockingly seriously. This is possibly the single most important strategic decision that a bricks and mortar bookseller is going to make, in the next 5 to 10 years. Because they're really deciding, who am I going to take all of my customers who I have accumulated over years and decades and lifetimes, and which ebook solution am I going to put them in the hands of? It is a momentous decision. And in that, who has the combination of devices and content ecosystem and the ability to deliver, meaning that they've done it before and can do it again, so that I can get a solution in time for the holidays. Sometimes these decisions happen quickly. There is a lot of due diligence. Sometimes there is a lot of research. They put us through their paces. They pull apart our solution. They end up in a very intricate set of integration and launch planning discussions. And the whole thing takes a little bit of time. So even though these discussions may have been going for months, in some cases years, somehow they all pile up in December with someone going, I really need a solution in time for Christmas. So things kind of pile up at the end of the fall. So now we're in a bunch of different markets, and as is usually the case when I come here, what are we seeing? What are some of the things that we're finding out right now? We're seeing a massive growth, a very rapid growth in the overall availability of ebooks over time, which was surprising to us. We kind of thought that the ongoing sort of onslaught of title volume would start to slow down, but that has not been the case. A catalog grows by about 3% a week, every week. Sometimes it spikes, sometimes a little lower. 3% is a nice median number for us. And that's driven by publishers who, now that they are seeing sales, those sales are starting to fund additional conversion efforts. We're seeing new markets come online where publishers suddenly get religion and decide it's time to start making digital assets available. There is the never-ending river of new titles coming in through self-publishing and the growth of that segment. And now we're also starting to see, regardless of the size of the market, we're starting to see a digital content aggregator in almost every country. So someone has stepped up and said, I will go out to all of the individual publishers in my market, I'll start to bring those assets together, and I'll make them available in one spot. And that makes it much easier for us to move from market to market to move things along. So in the last 6 months, we've seen a 40% increase in English language title count, and that was surprising to us because we kind of thought English was more or less done. No, new titles coming all the time. French, 70%, Dutch, 117%, Spanish, 129%, and then another 60% in Catalan, 206% increase in German, and 252% in Portuguese. So, and these in content collections, the exception of Portuguese, where we already had essentially the full slate of publishers in market. So what we're looking at is doubling off of an existing base, not new publishers necessarily coming in off the top. And when you look inside these catalogs, we're seeing some interesting changes happening to the shape and structure of them over time. If we'd looked at this slide, you know, a year or 2 years ago, this shows the proportion of different subject categories in terms of title count in our catalog today. And so you see, you know, kind of about a third fiction, about two-thirds nonfiction, in various types and styles, with juvenile fiction and nonfiction in sort of in the yellow side of the boxes. If we'd done this 2 years ago, you know, half of the titles would have been fiction. Publishers had prioritized fiction conversion very heavily. They'd moved fiction titles into the market very fast, and then had backfilled on nonfiction over time. So now we're seeing a catalog mix that looks a lot more like the print mix, with the exception of juvenile fiction and nonfiction, which is still under indexes in terms of total title count. And that balance of fiction and nonfiction looks a lot more like it would normally look in a bricks and mortar bookstore, in an e-commerce bookstore, now in digital. Where we're still seeing growth is in STM and education and self-publishing. We're also seeing that there are some print categories that just will never come over. You know, we're not going to see the same richness in travel books in digital that we see in print. You know, that market has actually gone elsewhere. It's gone to TripAdvisor, it's gone to WikiTravel, it's gone to other places. The same with reference. But the backlist backfill continues as agents and authors and publishers continue to struggle over backlist rights. In English, you know, the indie presses are almost all in right now. So, you know, even the smallest publisher has now figured out that they have some kind of digital program going on, and color content comics and graphic novels are really starting to show up. France kind of looks like the English market looked 2 years ago. Fiction, you know, a little more than a third, but the categories and the distribution of categories are different. Literary collections sell in French to a degree that we never see selling in the English market. Social science and poetry is much higher, as is history and literary criticism. France has still the highest prices in the EU, but we're now seeing French publishers starting to, in the context of their own market, which is very much a publisher price-controlled market, starting to turn the dials and experiment with price. And small presses just starting to show up, and comics and graphic novels, which is a huge market in France, also just starting to show up. Germany looks a lot more like the English market, but with the second lowest customer prices in the US, a much stronger output from major publishers. Publishers still converting like mad in Germany, but the thing that we see lagging in Germany is self-publishing. It does not have the same kind of uptake right now, either on the author side or on the consumer side, so far. And we're interested to see if we can push that a bit. The market in the Netherlands looks very much like that early stage digital market. All the publishers got their fiction in first. Nonfiction is still starting to show up. Dutch publishers are much more interested in price experimentation than some of their other EU confederates. And that may be partially because Netherlands is also where we see the strongest uptake of books from outside the Netherlands. There's a very strong competitive force of English language and non-Dutch content in the Dutch market. And self-publishing, interestingly, is growing very strongly in the Netherlands right now. Italy, we just got started. Interestingly, the lowest publisher set prices in the EU are in Italy right now. We just launched our partnership with Mondadori, and you know, I'm happy to say that if nothing else, the stores themselves look shockingly beautiful, as do our devices inside them, as do the people looking at them. It's truly an amazing thing. Portugal also looks very much like, you know, sort of English looked, you know, 2.5-3 years ago. A lot of fiction. You know, juvenile fiction second, and nonfiction just starting to get there. But of course, when we're looking at Portuguese, we're looking at not just Portugal, but Brazil. Yes, languages are different. Yes, there are variants in publishing, but a lot of those rights are held by Portuguese publishers, even as we sell into Brazil. So, then we come to Japan. Japan looks nothing like any other publishing market we have ever seen. And it's a source of endless fascination to us, but also huge opportunity. The consumer is very different. Their method of consumption is very different. The manga and light novel market is absolutely huge in the Japanese market. Japanese readers move through content very quickly, very high purchase frequency. This is already one of our largest markets, you know, a couple of months in, and we're just getting started. So, what do we see next? And in the BRIC conversation that we just had before, some of these themes kind of came up. There are fewer countries now with kind of that perfect combination of population and income, you know, digital content available for sale, high levels of literacy, and wireless kind of all in one place. So you kind of start to decide which ones can you do without, which ones can you bridge, which ones can you get past. More markets, the markets either tend to be smaller, as is the case when you start to look at Sweden, Norway, Denmark, or more fragmented, as would be the case for something like India. And so we then start to look at new models, new ways to sell content, selling content in different ways, but also realizing that the kind of fiction-driven ebook market that we've become very used to through North America and through Europe is not going to remain the kind of the common theme for selling once we get outside of those markets. We are going to see educational become a bigger category. We're going to see instructional, nonfiction skills development become a bigger part of the catalog in those markets. We're also going to start seeing a greater role for book retailers that are not national chains. One of the reasons that we're so excited about our relationship with the ABA in the US, with the Booksellers Association in the UK, is that it becomes the laboratory for figuring out how do you deal with distributed retail? How do you work with large collections of independent retailers as opposed to, you know, single, unified, and somewhat homogenous national chains? Because that very much becomes the selling environment as you move into India, and as you move into some of the smaller, more fragmented markets. As is always the case, I end up, you know, up here, you know, kind of the day or two before we have all of these fantastic announcements that we make at the Frankfurt Book Fair. And I don't get to talk about any of them, which is very sad for me. So please keep an eye out over the next couple of days. We have some great news coming up. A lot of things that will fill in some of the blank boxes I had to show up there, and also that really touch on some of these themes that we've talked about in the last few minutes. Thank you very much.